The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? Go ask Alice. Alice Cooper, that is. Saw him last night at the Greek here in Los Angeles. And they just burned the place down. And I don't know which name was screamed more, Alice or his guitarist, this Nita Strauss chick. Alice is a living legend, and Nita might be one in the making. She's long, lean, blonde, dangerous, and impossibly pointy. She's got the cheekbones, the jawline, and oh, she can make that axe beg for mercy. I've been a Cooper fan forever. And that's about how long he's been around. This was the third time I've seen him live, and it was the best show yet. How does an act keep getting better? Few entertainers in any genre can do what he does, and that is never, ever become stale, stagnant, or uncool. Think about that. Who has achieved timeless cool? In most cases, the only way to do it is to die young. That way the image can never change, right? James Dean, Jimi Hendrix. Few stars seem to pull that off. Look what became of Michael Jackson, Elvis, even Sinatra. I once saw him at the Nassau Coliseum, and he was reading the lyrics off cue cards on the floor. Some people just don't know when to quit. David Bowie pretty much managed to do what Alice has. He always stayed cool, never got old or tired, or did what so many other rock acts do, become parodies of themselves. What is it that imbues someone or something with timeless cool? How does someone achieve that status? Most acts that have been around as long as Alice are either history or they fall into a category that's not somewhere anybody ever really wants to be, I think. Nostalgia. Who wants to be thought of that way? Like being pressed into the yellowed and cracked pages of some old photo album. Brittle, musty, forgotten, until pulled from a shelf cluttered with other knickknacks. Nostalgia sucks. Alice Cooper is as fresh and fun and fantastic as he was when he started. How does he do that? I never met Alice, but I've read a lot about him. Seen a lot of footage. He seems to be a genuinely nice guy. I've never heard anyone say anything bad about him. In an industry known for outsized egos and pusillanimous pricks. I think part of his success comes from his ability to stay on task, as preschool teachers like to say, and his task is to entertain and make people feel good. There's never a message in his music, never what I like to call a Bono moment. No political statements, ever. You go to an Alice Cooper concert to hear and see fantastic theatrical rock and roll and laugh, and I feel like I'm at the coolest party ever thrown for 6,000 people I've never met. And that's always what I get. Alice Cooper, like any top-shelf entertainment, is a pretty big business. And in any business, the tone is set from the top. And it's just amazing how that tone does not merely trickle down, it gushes over everyone and everything. If there's a prick at the top, there will be pricks at the bottom, and every layer in between. Even in massive corporations, that's how it works. You can feel the company vibe even before you get on an elevator. The Cooper vibe is fun, 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 and you can see how much his band enjoys being there. No one is phoning it in. Everyone's giving 100%, and it's clear they like each other. Maybe another reason Alice holds up so well is he is really a character of self-invention, a ghoul. And ghouls are not trendy. You don't need beetle haircuts or mullets or flock of seagulls or shaved heads or tattoos to be perceived as current. It's almost like watching a period movie. Alice the Ghoul never looks dated. One of the most boring acts I ever saw was the Grateful Dead. They could have been fucking animatrons. I don't think one of them moved more than 9 inches during the entire show. Why would anyone go to a show like that? Unless it's Carnegie Hall, it will never sound as good as the recorded music. So why not just stay home with headphones? Another reason Alice has endured and achieved timeless cool is his sense of humor. It's all a goof, all a put on, and everyone is in on the joke. There's nothing more annoying than an earnest, crusading performer, is there? Nobody really gives a shit about anybody else's causes, do they? Cooper pretty much pioneered theatrical rock. Some call it shock rock. He gets his head cut off by a guillotine. He slaps around mannequins and miniskirts. He stabs them. He gets stabbed himself, stuffed in a straitjacket. Pointy women dressed as nurses manhandle him and jab him with a giant syringe. I'm surprised he's able to perform without some PC assholes protesting and trying to shut him down for offensive and inappropriate behavior. By the way, if I'm a little hoarse, it's because I got a little loud last night at the concert. There was a story recently in USA Today by a couple of thought police types who listed 20 songs that have become so offensive and so inappropriate that they think they should never get airplay again. In this new regressive, restrictive, finger-shaming culture of sensitivity, tunes by Stevie Wonder, Paul McCartney, The Stones, Katy Perry, Taylor Swift, Elton John, Lou Reed, and others would be better off banned, so they say. One example they found particularly cringeworthy, I think I'll add that word to the lexicon, for douchebags only, along with inappropriate and offensive. They don't like the old Carl Douglas disco song, Kung Fu Fighting, and here's why, they say.
Perhaps the song was just trying to celebrate the ancient art of Kung Fu, but its lyrics about stereotypically Asian-sounding last names isn't exactly nuanced appreciation of the culture.
What the fuck does that even mean? Let's have a listen to the passage they're referencing. Well, let's see now. The names they use are Sammy Chung and Billy Chin. And the names Chung and Chin in China are equivalent of Smith and Jones in the Western world. So what should this song have called these Kung Fu masters? Sammy Smith and Billy Jones? Shapiro and Goldberg? O'Hara and O'Neill? The song would make no sense whatsoever, but sense and sensitivity are mutually exclusive in the world of the chronically offended. Another song that bugs these two is Do They Know It's Christmas Time, which was recorded and mixed in the same 24-hour period in 1984. The idea was for heavyweights in pop music to come together to create a monster hit record and donate all proceeds to benefit starving kids in Ethiopia. Who wouldn't get behind that? So Geldorf and Phil Collins and Boy George and George Michael and a bunch of other musicians made an instant hit and very quickly poured $24 million into Ethiopia. I bet that filled a lot of empty stomachs. But according to these clowns at USA Today, that song was
offensive.
Here's what they said about it.
Possibly the most culturally insensitive Christmas song of all time. The Band-Aid supergroup may have raised money to alleviate an Ethiopian famine, but they did it with a song that declares the entire continent of Africa is bereft of water, trees, or joy.
So these journalists, finger quotes, are saying those musicians are a bunch of ignorant assholes who had no understanding of the lyrics they were singing. And they owe everyone an apology. These PC creeps are out of their minds and out of control. They're after free expression everywhere. Speech, music, literature. And they won't stop until there's only one song. Here's another tune I'm surprised they missed on their list of shame. I'm on a Mexican radio. I'm on a Mexican radio. I reference that one because of a geopolitical shit fight shaping up involving the U.S., Mexico, and China. Odd troika, isn't it? China just cut a deal with a Mexican radio station near Tijuana, and they're going to be splashing commie propaganda across Southern California to the estimated 600,000 Chinese folks living in the region. To what end, you have to wonder. Like those people are going to hear that shit and unload their swimming pool homes and BMWs at fire sale prices so they can run back to Beijing for smog, scarcity, and oppression. I wonder what communist Chinese propaganda sounds like. I used to get down in Miami a lot, and you could hear Radio Havana booming across the Caribbean. Every fucking paragraph began with Los Imperialistas Estados Unidos. The idea of using Mexican radio to blanket the U.S. or even the world is not new. Those stations aren't governed by the FCC, so while domestic stations are limited to 50,000 watts, the Mexican border blasters, as they call them, have been known to pump out as much as 250,000 watts, which could be heard in the States, Canada, and sometimes even Russia. That's how Wolfman Jack got to be so famous. He worked at a border blaster, and there were some nights I could listen to him in Queens, New York. The fusion of Mexican and Chinese radio just blows my mind. What will it sound like? For several years, there's been some kind of agreement in place between the FCC and Mexico that they're supposed to limit their broadcast signal to 77,000 watts from the 250,000 peak available. I'm hoping the Chinese convince Mexico not to abide by that agreement and saturate the entire Western Hemisphere with commie propaganda. Maybe the whole thing will blow up. Maybe the CIA will set up competing transmitting towers pointed at Mexico and pump in nothing but this 24/7.
Feelings. Fuck your feelings. All my life I'll feel it. Fuck your feelings. I wish I'd never met you, girl. Fuck your feelings.
It would make all the PC thought police happy by encouraging feelings. Now that we've mentioned feelings, the only ones we really give a shit about are the ones that we feel ourselves, the ones that give us heartache. So let's have a look at a situation faced by longtime listener and Patreonee, Armando. He shot me an email last week, and maybe we can help him out. His situation is far from unique. He had a fairly long relationship with a woman, and it recently ended. Trouble is, though that relationship is over, the memory lingers on. It appears Armando has a love hangover. Here's what he says. I think my biggest obstacle is when I have dreams about my ex. See, I'm very big into the study of virtue ethics, so I do a good job of keeping myself balanced. But when you have a dream that feels really real, it's an X factor. It's a seemingly unsolvable problem because I have no control over my subconscious, and I have no control over getting chicks from the past to give me real closure. And deep down, I kind of believe that if there isn't closure, there might still be a chance someday. And in my conscious brain, I know that's stupid as hell. I just wish I knew more ways to tap into my subconscious self, slap the shit out of him, and say, forget those chicks. They've definitely forgotten you. Well, first of all,
fuck your feelings.
Oops, wrong sounder, Armando. You certainly have added some layers of complexity to the situation. When it comes to romance and love, which are always only powered by hormones and insanity. Adding any ethics, virtue or otherwise, and runaway subconscious makes things more difficult. There are many schools of thought on getting over busted romances, and it seems there are different techniques to employ depending on your sex. We never say gender here. Chicks go shopping, or they have a one-night stand with anybody with a pulse. Is this nutty? Not really. It's self-validation. The shopping usually involves some obscenely priced footwear, which not only says, I'm worth it, it may also help them ensnare the one-night stand, which also is a form of validation, or self-abasement, depending on the guy. But people can spin anything any way they want, right? Now, guys also have their chosen methods. Number one might be getting shit-faced drunk, which leads to a two-day hangover, maybe a nasty fall, serious injury, loss of job, deeper depression, and suicide. See, there's a reason women live longer than men. Number one is they are far, far more emotionally resilient. So let's start with the virtue ethics. Just forget that stuff. All is fair in love and war, so why bring ethics into the most unethical arena there is? Next, let's work on your subconscious. Plenty of people claim we can exercise some degree of control over it, and that's true. Next time you fall asleep with your wrist bent in a way that inhibits blood flow and creates an ache, just watch how fast you dream that Samoa Joe has you in an arm lock. So it's clear that external stimuli can affect our dreams. So why shouldn't we be able to steer our subconscious to or away from whatever we choose? First, they recommend you avoid TV or online surfing or reading anything for about an hour before bed. Just zone out. Play your guitar or stargaze or do something like a puzzle or knitting, anything that requires zero significant thought. When you put your head on the pillow, you might envision your ex-girlfriend on an escalator descending into hell, or an ice floe headed for the open sea, or a rocket into the sun, any one-way trip. Watch her conveyance and her become a speck on the horizon and then vanish. Since it is impossible for the mind to hold two thoughts simultaneously, next comes the replacement female, which bears out an old bromide. The only cure for a woman is another woman. It's true. So you must pick a woman, an attainable woman, not some TV or movie star, maybe some hottie from work or the mall, some female that you could actually meet and date. And now you want to focus your subconscious mind on her. Maybe she's walking toward you in heels and a see-through dress, or she's smiling at you as she rides in your direction on her bicycle. This is where you begin to let your subconscious do the heavy lifting, and it will. Of course, you smile back at her, and she stops, and you talk, and the talk goes from mundane crap to some flirtation, and maybe she was on her way to lunch and asks if you'd like to join her, and boom, you're on your way to the kind of dreams that will help you forget the ex and find the next ex. No, some wonderful woman with whom to share your life. Or you could scrap the entire dream training thing and take the shortcut. Just find a girl, any girl who does not repulse you, and go out with her. It's what a pal of mine called the starter kit. She doesn't have to be the love of your life or Miss Universe, but if you do that a few times, odds are one of them will pique your interest. Girls are good at that. And if it's mutual, she will quickly set up a command post in your brain and or your pants, and the ex-girlfriend will fade from memory faster than you ever thought possible. Good luck to you, Armando. Thanks for listening and supporting the show and sharing your situation with the rest of the dojo. So there you have it. From rock legends with timeless cool to song cops to Chinese propaganda to romantic pain management through dream regulation. We're nothing if not eclectic here at the TNS Dojo. At patreon.com/thatlarryshow, you'll get access to many bonus episodes and the same personal attention as Armando. Write to me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com and come back and hang with us in a few days for Sinner's Sunday. Last week, we showed you how to make a good deal with the devil. From Satanists to Satan flakes, if the horned one should appear and offer you a deal, you won't get screwed. Seriously, if you've not heard that episode, go to thatlarryshow.com and check it out. And while you're there, click that subscribe by email button so you never miss a show. And until that time, take no shit.